From the Moan Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. Sandra Oh makes history and Netflix beats HBO. We break down all of the top stories from today's Emmy nominations. Then musician Bea Beeman has a new song about Latino immigrants that drew from his own family history.
Every immigrant has a different story. This idea that they're freeloaders and they don't have an actual reason for leaving is incorrect, divisive, and harmful, really.
And Guatemalan singer Gabby Moreno and country rocker Radney Foster lend their voices to immigrants at the border. All that coming right up. Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. We're going to start today with this.
It's full, Sally.
I know. I got thrown off right before I was about to go on. I was outside going...
Excuse me. I don't give a shit. Even your excuses are false. You're up there. You're stinking up my stage, babe.
That performance as the eccentric acting teacher in the HBO comedy Barry brought Henry Winkler his first Emmy nomination. And Winkler is not alone in feeling Emmy love. Sandra Oh made history becoming the first Asian-American woman to get a lead actor nomination. And that's for her BBC show Killing Eve. And Donald Glover from the FX series Atlanta got four nominations in four different categories. To unpack this and more, I called up Daniel Feinberg at The Hollywood Reporter, and when he picked up the phone, he sounded weary.
Oh, you know, just trying to process a list of 9,000 Emmy nominees, so I'm sure that whatever we're about to talk about, I'm going to have fixated on something entirely different by this afternoon, so you're catching me in one current slice of my brain.
And what a slice it is. Daniel, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what was your first reaction when you heard that Netflix had surpassed HBO's Emmy nomination lead after HBO was in front for 18 years?
Mostly what I felt was, yeah, it's probably about time. And yeah, that's probably the direction that the industry is going. And the amazing thing is that so Netflix beat HBO by four nominations this year, 112 to 108. And if you look at the sheer volume of Netflix programming, for all of those nominations, there are still very popular Netflix shows that didn't get many nominations at all. I'm thinking of something like Dear White People, zero nominations. Glow, while it got a bunch of nominations, didn't get one for Alison Brie. There, you know, Netflix did leave some nominations on the table. They have more reality shows coming every minute. They could beat HBO by 60 next year, which is why HBO is in the midst of a programming strategy reevaluation, I guess you could say.
Well, we could say HBO is pretty top-heavy. If you take out Westworld and you take out Game of Thrones, it's basically half of their nominations, and they're really only programming one night a week with original content on Sundays, whereas Netflix, their nominations are really spread far and wide.
And for years, the broadcast networks complained that the HBOs and Showtimes and even the FXs of the world were playing by different rules. And it was this whole thing about, oh, we do 40 shows per year. You guys only do three. And now you have the HBOs and Showtimes and whatever's of the world looking at Netflix and looking at Amazon and Hulu, which also had very good mornings, and going, hey, but you're playing by entirely different rules. So this is not a level playing field at this particular moment. And I think that with each passing year, you see the disparities begin to become more and more prominent.
For late night hosts, Donald Trump is the gift that keeps on giving. If we're to look at the way that Emmy voters reacted to what late night hosts have been doing and what they've been talking about, what were your takeaways about who was recognized and, I guess, like Bill Maher, who wasn't?
Anyone who thought that Samantha Bee, for example, was going to be punished for the unfortunate word that she used to describe Ivanka Trump was probably a little on the foolish side. And I was happy to see Trevor Noah and The Daily Show get back into the field this year. They knocked that show out of the Variety Talk Series category last year, almost as a punishment for Trevor Noah not being Jon Stewart. And I think this year voters looked and went, oh, he's not Jon Stewart, but he's actually doing a really, really good show. So I wish that they would pay more attention to people like Seth Meyers, to, I don't know, someone even further off the normal playing field like Robin Thede on BET, who's doing great work.
Let me ask you a couple questions about comedy series. What would you say the nominees in that category suggest about the era of the traditional sitcom and whether or not that is really gone for good?
there are definitely shows that are quote-unquote more traditional, and I think Black-ish is a quote-unquote more traditional show. But you've got Atlanta, which many different times this season just wasn't funny. It wasn't trying to be. It was trying to be scary. It was trying to be suspenseful. It was trying to be 800 other different things. So good on the voters for recognizing it. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, it's really a drama series that happens to be about a comedian, but also have funny beats to it. So that's kind of reflective of looking at an hour-long show as being a comedy, something that they can do. Silicon Valley keeps getting nominated every year. Curb Your Enthusiasm, I thought it had a dismal comeback season this year, and there it is back in the category, and I think there were much better shows that could have taken its place. I think Better Things on FX, honestly, was punished because of Louis C.K., who wrote or co-wrote every episode with Pamela Adlon, and the only nomination that show got was for Adlon as lead actress, and it was my number one show of 2017, so I'm very disappointed, actually, to see that it was not in the serious conversation there.
In terms of diversity, do you think that the Academy is doing a good job in terms of representation and diversity?
I think they're trying. I think if you look into deeper categories, obviously there are bigger problems, but I think if you at least look at kind of the frontline acting nominees, which are who people look at most frequently, you get Sandra Oh as the first Asian lead actress nominee. That's important. You look at Sterling K. Brown and Jeffrey Wright, at Issa Rae, who was a slight surprise nominee this year, completely and totally deserved, but I think some people weren't sure if she was going to get that recognition. You know, Donald Glover, who was nominated, I think, for 4 or 5 today. I think he was nominated for 3 nominations already for Atlanta, for writing and directing also. He'll get another one for producing the show. He was nominated for hosting SNL. That's a lot of recognition, and I think it's great to see all of that. I think if you look towards writing and directing nominees, you would discover that there are still definitely places where progress still could be made. But I think at the top, it is a reasonably reflective group.
Daniel Feinberg is a TV critic. He joined us from the newsroom of The Hollywood Reporter. Daniel, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up on The Frame, singer-songwriter Bea Beeman on being the son of Sri Lankan immigrants growing up in Missouri. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Now, singer-songwriter Bea Beeman is the child of immigrant parents who came here from Sri Lanka. However, his musical education was in American rock and roll, which seems fitting, having grown up in Chuck Berry's hometown of St. Louis, Missouri. But Beeman gave up rock and roll for a more introspective acoustic style of music. He took inspiration from Hank Williams, Bob Dylan, and Randy Newman, whose lyrics typically combine social issues with personal narratives, and he developed a guitar style modeled after acoustic bluesmen like Blind Blake. Now based in Los Angeles, Beeman has released a new song and accompanied video called Beyond the Border, and it tells of the horrors that many immigrants face coming to the United States. When I spoke with Beeman, we started with his formative years when he was learning Soundgarden guitar solos by heart.
I'm like a guitar player since I was 7. I started singing when I was 20, so like more guitar player.
What happened in those 13 years?
AC/DC, Soundgarden.
Meaning that's what you were playing or that's what you were trying to sing?
No, I wasn't even trying to sing. I was just learning riffs, like Led Zeppelin, like guitar stuff. Probably driving my brother and my parents absolutely crazy, because especially my parents, who absolutely had no idea what I was listening to other than it was just like noise.
At what point did you start get interested in acoustic music, folk music? Was that an evolution? Was it an epiphany? How did that come about?
I definitely like rock and roll first, and then the acoustic sort of thing. I mean, everybody who's called themselves a singer-songwriter listens to Bob Dylan at some point, and that was a big deal to me. The presentation and what he was saying and the ideas he was able to convey viscerally to the listener. Like, I listened to rock and roll, but they weren't conveying messages the way he was, and that was a big deal to me. And then some artists who weren't exactly acoustic artists, who were songwriters who worked in that way, were Randy Newman and Warren Zevon to me. Like when I heard the song Excitable Boy by Warren Zevon, I was just like, holy shit, you can sing stuff like that? Like I was finally 15 years old and I was like, oh man. And then Randy Newman, of course, Short People.
Mm-hmm.
He balances his ridiculous songs with some of the most beautiful things I've ever heard, like Burn On or I Think It's Gonna Rain Today. So he writes like songs Nina Simone would cover, jazz standards, whatever you want to call them.
I'd like to play a song from your second album. It's called Kimchi Line.
Well, there ain't no use, boy, in trying to jump that fence. They got guns on the green side. You ain't making no sense. So I climbed up on a ladder to see what I could see. While the leader's getting fatter, I feel my stomach bleed. I'm on the kimchi line.
I ended up writing the song about family being divided by a political fence, like a literal fence, like North and South Korea. But in my parents' homeland, Sri Lanka, there's a somewhat similar ethnic strife conflict going on there. So I wanted to talk about that. But nobody knows anything about Sri Lanka, but people do know what kimchi is. So I was like, that fits, you know.
And it's also a song, I mean, you referenced Randy Newman earlier, that kind of unfolds as a story. It's almost kind of short story.
I love that.
Put to music.
Yeah, I love short stories for sure. If I can, you know, do a 3-minute story, that's awesome. Sometimes that doesn't always work. It's just like very half-assed. But
right.
Sometimes I can complete the whole idea and get all my points across and it's still catchy. And those are bigger criteria than any of my like agendas with politics and everything else. But I am super sensitive to somebody telling me how it should be and how you should think. I think a lot of people do that. But if you make it about a human being and not about like the issue, I think you can change somebody's mind a little bit more.
I'm curious about growing up in St. Louis as the child of immigrants. How did that shape your view of the world, and how did that experience of growing up there with your folks change the way you looked at music and what you could do with it?
That's a big one to unpack. When I grew up in St. Louis, I was one of only a handful of like South Asian immigrant kids. So I was seen as like exotic in some ways. I remember playing baseball in a tournament and this kid coming up to me is like, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from here. And then he's like, no, where are you really from? I was like, I'm from America or whatever. I said something back to him. I was just like, oh, like nobody's seen my color skin with like kind of straight hair. It didn't exist in St. Louis at that time. And to answer your question about musically, my dad listened to like oldies music. I mean, at that time, Clue 103.3 in St. Louis, you know,
it's like Tony Bennett, Sinatra.
No, not that old. It was more like 60s old, you know, and they would do
so
that.
So the band.
Oldies 103.3. I really miss those. So that was an introduction. My mom didn't really listen to music. She would hum while washing dishes. That was about it. I wasn't one of those dudes who was like, yeah, I've been listening to jazz since I was like 2 years old. And my parents had the Beatles on. Like, I'm like, no, I just figured it out slowly over time.
We're talking with Bee Beeman, the musician, singer, and songwriter. I'm going to play a single from your upcoming album. It's called Have a Little Faith.
They say let go and just let God.
I wrote that probably after the 2016 election, and my jaw dropped after that election for sure. It was have a little faith that things will turn out well, turn out right, and we will be stronger for it. It's tough in this Twitter world where you just get barraged by it. It's almost easier to just put your head in the sand.
I want to play another song from your upcoming album. This one's called Beyond the Border, and it's told from the perspective of a Latino immigrant. Let's listen to it.
Kiss my baby last goodbye. Wipe the tears out from her eyes. Now she's left to wonder why. Just beyond the border, it's like we're an outbreak. And they are the treatment.
it's unbelievable that you wrote a song that was probably written a couple months ago, right? That is incredibly timely given what's happening at the border right now and parents being separated from their children.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the writing of that song and what prompted it and how it came together.
Like I said, I've always been into politics, but the policy never interested me. It was more like, how does this affect people in a positive or negative way? My heart bleeds for immigrants who are demonized, who are separated. There is a huge portion of the country who look at them as the other, look at them as a statistic, look at them as an issue. And I'm very sensitive to ethnically labeling somebody, because in Sri Lanka, where my parents are from, our people, the Tamil people, are an ethnic minority. We've been oppressed for a long time. And every immigrant has a different story. This idea that they're freeloaders and they don't have an actual reason for leaving Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, or Mexico, and they just want to freeload is incorrect and divisive and harmful, really. These are people going through a lot, fleeing violence, looking for economic opportunity. So I wanted to write a song about that and humanize them. The story is about somebody who's been twice removed. He's displaced once, and then he's displaced again from the U.S. by being deported, leaving his family, his children, his wife, to wait for him or not wait for him, and just thrown into complete uncertainty.
So there are two outcomes that a song like this can yield. One is material, and that is that the proceeds from the song are going to benefit the International Rescue Committee, which works to help refugees around the world. Mm-hmm. And the second one is the theoretical, and that is, how does it change minds? How does protest song alter a conversation?
The greatest hope is that it changes people's mind and then policy changes. Mm-hmm. That's quite an ask, in my opinion. What I do think is valuable is showing families, showing children, showing them in these situations that are not made up. Like, I made a video for this, and I used a lot of photos from photojournalists around the world. And this is not fake. There's no doctoring of these images. This is just like, this is what is happening around the world. You can deny it if you don't see it, but once you see it, you can't really deny it. And so that was partly why I put that video together.
How has becoming a dad changed the way you see music?
That's a tough one. That's a good question. I like Moana's soundtrack a lot more. but there's a sense of purpose. Anybody who has a kid changes your life. There's a light switch that goes on. I'll use an analogy from a guitar player named Jean Bosco Mwenda. He would say, a man without a wife is like a motorcycle driving in the middle of the night without a headlight. But I feel that way about having a kid, honestly.
B, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
B. Beeman's next album will be out this fall, and he isn't the only musician singing about the plight of immigrants. Coming up next on The Frame, Guatemalan immigrant Gabby Moreno and country artist Radney Foster add their voices to the protest songs of today. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Earlier in the show, singer-songwriter B. Beeman talked about his song, Beyond the Border, and he's not the only musician who's been inspired to address current issues regarding immigration. Country singer and songwriter Radney Foster is from Texas, one of the focal points of the immigration debate, and he recently turned an older song of his called Godspeed, Sweet Dreams into a new recording called Dulces Sueños.
Singer-songwriter, and I was born and raised in Del Rio, Texas. I wrote Godspeed, Sweet Dreams for my oldest boy when he was 5 years old. His mother and I had divorced, and she had remarried a Frenchman, and after a custody dispute, moved to France with my son. So I wrote this lullaby just truly as a love song to him, just letting him know that, you know, I was his dad and I cared. And I thought about all the things that you do when you're putting a little boy to bed, a little four-year-old, five-year-old boy. And, you know, we would read stories and, you know, Superman's in pajamas on the couch.
Godspeed, little man. Sweet dreams, little man.
I was having coffee with my wife. Said how much I ate, because to me, you know, separating a child from their parents, having grown up on the border, you know, in a bilingual home in a community that's 80% Latino, and understanding enough about the politics of the mess that's happening in Central America, you know, politics and the drug trade, you know, just what could we do? She said, you should figure out how to sing Godspeed in Spanish. You know, a prayer for the children at the border.
Caminos duros y aguas anchas. Vuelas alto en tus sueños. Duerme bajo de la luz de la luna. Y te amo. Godspeed, mija. Dulces sueños pequeñita.
I hope it changes people's hearts. I think that that puts a face to it. It puts emotion to it. It can win people over in ways that an argument cannot.
Godspeed.
I've closed my shows as the last encore with this song for decades. You know, I don't know if I can speak for the country music community, but I know that I can speak for my audience for the most part. Even when they disagree with me politically, they see my heart, and they see that I'm going to move towards things that are heartfelt.
Pero puedo cantar. Godspeed.
That was singer-songwriter Radney Foster, and that segment came to us from our friends at public radio station KUT in Austin, Texas. And now a song by a musician who is herself an immigrant. Gabby Moreno moved to Los Angeles from Guatemala in 2000 to pursue her musical dreams, and lately she's been collaborating with producer and arranger Van Dyke Parks on her next album. It's due later this fall. But for July 4th, they hurried to release a song called The Immigrants. Here's Gabby Moreno.
I always tell people now that I feel like an angelteca. I've been living in Los Angeles for 18 years. That's half of my life. But I'm still not a citizen. I'm still just a U.S. resident. Can I feel part of both? Is that so bad? You know? My name is Gabby Moreno. And I was born and raised in Guatemala City, and I came to the United States when I was 19. I love singing songs from Latin America, whether it's from Guatemala or Mexico or Peru or Argentina. And it felt good for me to be introducing this kind of music to an American audience. I met Van Dyke Parks, and we started talking about music from Latin America, and he told me how much he loved it and he felt a strong connection with it. And so we said, well, it would be great to do a little project where we bring in songs from different countries of Latin America as well as songs from the United States and try to bridge the two hemispheres. We don't want to build a wall.
So much trouble in the home of the brave and the land of the NYPD.
And he was the one who brought to my attention the song The Immigrants.
Am I an immigrant or am I a new slave made for old brutality?
So the song originally was written in 1998 by David Rutter for a Haitian refugee who was severely beaten by New York City police. And now we decided to change the lyrics to make it more relevant for the whole nation and not just New York City.
So much trouble in the home of the brave and the land of the free.
We had this song ready to go, but we had no idea that it would be so relevant right now, especially with what we're seeing right now, that they're being separated. Kids from their parents is like, what is this? What have we become?
Is it that man has lost his reason?
I think it's an important song to let everybody know that I think we all should be speaking up. We are doing something amazing and we're not going anywhere. You know, we've always been here and you better get with it.
The immigrants are here to stay to help build America. Oi, 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 oi.
And that is our show for today. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. You'll find us at The Frame, and you can find me at JG Horn. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Fighting for